Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 359 of the Roguecast, recorded December 28th, 2021. Master of the Archipelago.
Okay, we're back after a couple of weeks off. Y'all might know there was this little holiday going on called Christmas, and we were busy.
Yeah.
Very busy.
Yeah. The pandemic has unique stresses that we usually try and hide from folks, so that it's invisible to y'all. But what it means is that sometimes where we used to like have this very rather orderly arrival times for shipments and things like that pre-pandemic is now, for 2 years, has been completely out the window. All new crazy patterns that change on a daily basis. We never know when we're going to get no boxes in a day or 30 boxes in a day.
I had a Facebook memory pop up yesterday that our post-Christmas order in 2019 was 19 boxes, the biggest order we'd ever received. Mm-hmm. this last week on Wednesday, or Tuesday rather, we usually record the podcast, we received 40 boxes.
Yeah.
So, it's a lot. And it just happens randomly, and we had to put stuff out. So, yeah, that, and we were busy. We had a lot of people shopping with us, which we appreciate.
We wanted a podcast.
But we've not been able to just podcast. So we've built up 3 weeks worth of news, 3 weeks worth of comics, which is good, because it turns out the last week of the year, there's really not a lot of comics, and especially when Diamond hasn't even shipped our comics the week yet.
And y'all may recall that sometimes they just do a skip week at the end of the year.
This week they did it by accident.
This week they did it by accident. But actually, there's still the Marvel and DC stuff. So so there are some options.
Worth checking out.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's just a...
but it's not a normal-sized week, even remotely.
One of the silver linings of the pandemic, I suppose, was the distribution thing, which seemed like a nightmare. It is. But it means that when Diamond screws up, we're not without comics for the week. So this week we've got all our DC and Marvel, despite the fact that Diamond has shipped us nothing. So that's good.
Yay. Nothing but silver linings here.
Yes. It's kind of a silver lining made of silvery blades that slice our souls to ribbons. So with that said, we got a whole bunch of stuff. We also haven't talked about some notable movies, so we're going to try and work that in.
Have there been any notable movie releases?
Well, there was that one Spider-Man movie that everybody saw.
Talking about Into the Spider-Verse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The trailer for Into the Spider-Verse 2.
I mean, I guess it was kind of. So
did we talk about that?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, all right. So, yes, store news first. We did, right before Christmas, got a big stock of stuff.
Yeah.
And so one of the things is Caper Europe, which is you're basically running capers, heists, and it's the people who do parks, which we all love, board game we really liked, and this looks like a very similar vibe, but just like a different theme.
Yeah, it has a really cool aesthetic.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And we got those postcards of the various Tower of London, the Louvre.
All different sort of places in Europe.
That's our Art Deco postcards, which we got those. And those, you can even if you don't get the game, you can get those. A set of $5 gets you like 24 postcards.
Yeah, 24 postcards. It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. If you're the type of person who sends postcards or who likes collecting art or who really loves cartoon representations of the Tower of London.
It has, as I think Nick noticed last week, a very Wes Anderson, especially some of the art and stuff associated with, what was the new one, French Dispatch. It has very much has those vibes. It's very nice artwork.
Yeah.
Class of Join Up.
Rolling Realms, which is a roll and write, which is a game I've really started to like, that incorporates all the other stuff from Stonemaier Games, which is Wingspan, Scythe, all that kind of stuff. So it's like a roll and write multiverse game set in their game universes. I haven't played it yet, but I'm very interested in the possibilities. Small Islands, which is a new game from Lucky Duck Games, which they did, Chronicles of Crime, I think is one of theirs.
Yeah.
Small Islands is a tile-based game where you're building islands. And they also have something called Crime Zoom.
I will be Master of the Archipelago. Before I'm done with that game.
It's
not possible, Dan.
The Crime Zoom games, these little games that you're doing, like it takes you to there. It's a new style of game. I think it's in the vein of like the escape room type games. But basically each one has a different setting. So there's one that's like Paris in 1940, and one that's like modern day Spain or something like that. So look kind of fun. There's two out so far.
Okay.
There'll be more. Also Lucky Duck games. There was the Let's Summon Demons, Let's Search for Treasure games, which are the I forget the guy's name, is an artist who does these sort of like...
sort of retro, I'm going to say art that looks like retro 60s or 70s, like cartoon art that sort of like looks like it almost could be the cover of Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Yes.
And...
Steve Rhodes is the guy's name.
Yeah. And this is like a series of three, I'm going to guess, kind of fast play games.
Yeah,
They looked fun. They had a vibe that was a little on the campy 70s vibe side of things.
Yeah. We got the revised version of Last Friday, which is the hidden movement game where one of you is playing...
Basically Jason. And the rest are the campgoers.
I didn't realize that's sort of a legacy aspect, too. There's four segments of the game. There's like a... You go to the camp... And then you're being hunted, and there's like four different games.
Playing multiple movies, presumably, or something like that. Yeah,
so kind of fun. We finally got the G.I. Joe deck building game.
Yep.
So we now have all of them. We got the G.I. Joe deck builder, Transformers deck builder, and the Power Rangers deck builder. All same company. None of them interact with one another.
Right.
So
a little bit weird, but that generally means good things for the game. It means it was like designed to be like a really good G.I. Joe game, and not to have to deal with some giant dumb Zords.
Yes.
Only the true, serious G.I. Joe.
Yes, like Roadblock.
Yes, classy stuff like that. Roadblock, who rhymed everything he said on the cartoon.
And was a chef and carried a machine gun.
Hell yeah. Not like some dumb Power Ranger.
Yeah. Munchkin Russia, which is a new Munchkin, which is full of Russia jokes.
Okay.
A weirdly specific one. I don't know. I don't get it, but...
Yakov Munchoff.
They haven't done a new Munchkin in a while, so there's a new Munchkin. Cartographer's Heroes, which Cartographer's is a... sort of a puzzle game that's a spin-off of the role-player adventures.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a fantasy. It's got these little sheets you tear away and you create little patterns, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Something similar to Patchwork.
Okay.
I've played the base one. I haven't played Heroes, but Heroes has little extra expansions that has like the underworld and heaven set and that kind of stuff, which is kind of fun. So
nice.
And then we finally got Unfathomable, which is the new, basically, Battlestar Galactica-style game.
Yeah, it's literally a reskin, but I'm sure with some heavy rethinking
it.
But if you ever played the co-op Galactica game that came out, I don't know, 10 years ago or whatever, it was really ingeniously designed. It was a cooperative game, but with the traitor mechanic, and where somebody could be a Cylon, and they had some neat ideas in there. But you would also, while you were surviving... You'd have to survive occasional attacks from Cylon invaders and stuff, while the ship spooled up the warp drive or whatever.
Yep.
And I know that they have a variant of that where the ship is, like, attacked by deep ones and other Lovecraftian creatures.
Yeah, I think that's notable. This is a reskin. Basically, it's a 1920s Titanic-style ship.
Yeah.
But you're under attack by deep ones.
Yeah, I assume there's, like, a survivalist element of just keeping the ship going and trying to get probably to land. Meanwhile, you're escaping Lovecraftian creatures.
What if you're trying to get to an island?
Could be. An island called New Caprica.
Yes.
It's from Fantasy Flight, who... Did they also put out the...
They originally did Battlestar Galactica.
And, of course, they're known for their good components and all of that stuff. And they're, of course, they're Lovecraftian games. So,
yep.
I'm interested to try this. I like the Galactic game quite a bit.
Yep. All right. Well, let's talk about news. We got a whole bunch of trailers we just watched.
Yeah.
I think Dave and I are enthused for about two of them.
Yes.
So Nick will have to carry the conversation here.
The other ones, the ones that I'm not enthused for, are very polished-looking pieces of work. It's just the kind of thing that I'm not really into right now, or I'm not feeling it. But they look decently made, most of them. So let's go through them.
Okay, before we have the trailer conversation, I'd like to have a trailer for the trailer conversation.
Okay.
Specifically, I would talk about how trailers before trailers are dumb.
Do people know about this? If you're watching... Is it in theaters, too, or just, like, when you're watching...
I think it's only on YouTube.
I think, it's only a digital thing.
So maybe you've seen this phenomenon. You're about to watch roughly a two-minute trailer or whatever, and about the five or seven seconds before the trailer starts, they show you, like, a smash cut of a bunch of quick scenes from the trailer you're about to watch.
Yeah, there's a trailer for the trailer. I don't understand.
I have to imagine that there's, like, that they watch... What do they call it? The click-through,
kind of the follow-through when
you watch a video? There must be some people that, like, if they're not grabbed in, like, 10 seconds, they bail. And so they're like, we have to hit them with some sexy stuff.
Damn Gen Z ruining everything.
Thank you, avocado toasters.
This is how we're... This is how we're going to get Blitfords. Which, by the way, that's a 40-year-old reference.
Yeah, I feel like listener Russell Sinclair might know what Blitverts are. But let's not say what it's from. It is something from the 80s. Yes. I guess I'll say that. But
from the 80s.
I just want to defend avocado toast. It's pretty tasty.
I've never had it. It actually always sounded good to me. I love avocados. Toast is good.
But if Dave eats avocado toast, he will transform immediately into a Gen Zer and love Trailers for Trailers.
That's true.
I mean, what price, Nick, your avocado toast?
At what price?
I hate them. I don't understand them. I wish somebody would actually tell me. This is your reasoning.
You're talking about Gen Zers?
Oh, yeah, well, no.
That's hardcore.
Yeah, talking about people who eat avocado toast.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about trailers. So let's start.
Yes.
Let's start by talking about the two TV trailers we got, which is one is for Paramount Plus's Halo, which is the video game blockbuster
Microsoft.
From
Microsoft.
Yeah,
have people heard of this game?
I've
who here has played it?
I played a ton of it.
I played a little bit of it because my kid's friend bought it on my Xbox.
I have not played so much as 1 second of a Halo game in my life.
Really? Not even when it originally came out?
No.
I
didn't.
It's a shooter.
I was a po' boy.
It's a little bit more than that.
I didn't have a whatever that was like the original Xbox, right?
Yeah.
I didn't have an original Xbox, so all the games that came out for that were a miss for me.
I don't know much about the world. I just know that there's armored men fighting aliens.
I've gathered there's a decent story
there
of some sort.
From what I understand, there is too. In the original game, it was really just the kind of Colonial Marines versus the Reach, I believe, is what they're called.
Okay. You pretty much always in these games play Master Chief.
Yeah, but I think in some of the later games they've expanded out
to Mistress Chief.
Well, there are other various Marines that have had upgrades.
Sure.
Master Chief was sort of supposed to be like their Captain America, kind of like super soldiered out completely.
Yeah. I know that they always keep him helmeted. It gives him the Boba Fett mystique. People can project whatever they want.
And he's got the.
Do you actually ever get any backstory on him, or is the story always the plot?
I don't know, but I assume so.
Okay.
I don't think that the game could survive. Like, how many iterations has it been through? Like,
I mean,
six?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's kind of the Judge Dredd thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't, Judge Dredd himself doesn't have to be interesting if the world around him is entertaining.
Yeah.
Well, he has a sidekick in the female.
Little Chiefsy?
Her name is Cortana. Or Cortana.
Is that like a little AI thing?
Yeah, a little AI.
And she's also the official voice of, like, the Microsoft, like, Windows now.
Oh, too, yeah, she
which is.
Which is
weird.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's
which is very weird.
That's the same thing?
Yeah.
Oh, weird. We're stuck in the Halo future. That's happening.
Yeah, you know the meme going around about the, we finally created the Vortex of Pain from the classic novel Vortex of Pain?
I didn't know. What are you talking about?
It's a thing basically about how technology, because we're all such nerds, that people make these science fiction novels about how you should not invent this technology.
Yeah.
But the technology's like, oh, we should make that, and they make the technology that the novel is very specifically telling you not to make.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I feel like Halo is that. It's like
that sounds like us.
Cortana is not the bad guy. She's just an AI assistant, just like in this.
So the trailer looked like it had a lot of money behind it, because for a TV show, it looked like a full movie.
Very, very pretty.
Lots of starscapes and planets and...
this is Paramount, right?
So big capital shipping.
So this is the same as Star Trek Discovery and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
Paramount Plus?
Yeah,
Paramount
okay.
Plus. I kind of wasn't really paying attention on that.
So they're throwing money behind this.
The tech looks cool. Like
that said, I don't like know what the story per se is. I mean, I gather they're all some stripe of alien invasion, but if not invasion, like, is it like about alien incursions? Like, you know, are there vast star empires that are battling it out, Nick, or are they like coming to Earth?
I wish I could tell you.
You drove a Warthog, Nick. You gotta
know. I have driven Warthogs. I've flown Wraiths.
But why were you driving the Warthog?
They told me that the Reach were the bad guys, and I was fighting them.
That's fair. That's fair. That's pretty much how I played Doom and every other preceding
game.
And
then when we all banded together and fought in like a Halo like deathmatch, I played that.
Why
constantly.
Were you killing those people, Nick?
Well, they were noobs, and I had to own them.
This will finally be the show I've needed about poning noobs.
Poning noobs, yes.
I'm going to try
this. Do you think
it's
going to be any good?
I hope so.
Does it have anybody behind it that we know of?
No idea. No idea.
Okay.
The trailer certainly... I thought I recognized one person, but that doesn't...
I thought I did too, but
the only thing I can say is it felt like it had a little bit of emotional sweep, and it felt like... It was pushing a quality vibe off of it.
Yep.
But like, if there's a story per se, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it. Who
oh, that was Natasha McKellen from Ronan and.
Yeah, right.
Did you say Ronan? Yeah, the, do you remember the old movie Ronin,
Robert De Niro?
Isn't that like 30 years old?
Shut up! It's not 30 years old, it's like 26.
I'm not, okay, 26 is like 30.
And the guy playing Master Chief is Pablo Schreiber, which he's been
in. Oh, he's been in The Wire.
Yeah, The Wire. He's good. Yeah, he is good.
He's a good actor.
Well, if The Mandalorian has taught us one thing, it's that badass unmasked or constantly masked heroes, I should say, are in the zeitgeist right now.
Yes.
So, but is there room for two?
It's That's the question. Ready to make a comeback.
Also, Bokeem Woodbine.
Yeah, did recognize Woodbine, him. Who I did like him. Yeah.
Honestly, a Judge Dredd TV show makes more sense than a movie because
they're working on that.
They can, I just don't know if it's.
They're working on Mega City 1, which I don't think is going to happen.
No, probably not. Which is, it is.
Was,
too
would
bad.
Mega City 1 have been more of an ensemble?
Yeah.
Because that would actually be pretty cool if Judge Dredd was like this, the bull in a china shop cop, and everybody else was like, you know, kind of a little more variety.
Well, that was the thing. They were going to have Carl Urban play Dredd.
Yeah. Huh.
He was going to be like a background.
And he wanted to do it. He was like one of the persons who was spearheading it.
That would have been a good idea.
It hasn't happened, so maybe pandemic killed it. Maybe Judge Dredd.
But maybe Halo will do so good, they will also decide it's time for our masked hero to appear.
Yeah. The other TV trailer was Reacher from Prime.
Yeah.
AKA the third sort of filmed outing for Jack Reacher after two Tom Cruise movies that
were just like those okay.
I own them. They're fun. They're not great, and I especially if you're a Jack Reacher fan, they don't really.
He doesn't feel like
Reacher.
No, he's like an ex-military guy, right?
Yeah, he's an ex-military
police. Yeah,
military police, and he's like a big dude.
Yeah, he gets.
Everybody knows that Tom Cruise is a giant.
Yes,
he gets honorably discharged, and he has lived his life so kind of just. On army bases and stuff, even growing up.
He has a minimal paper trail.
Yeah,
whatever,
he basically
right?
just
He's off the grid.
He doesn't know how to, like, live a normal life, so he kind of is like a wanderer.
A nomad righting wrongs.
He's very kind of kung fu.
Traveling the Badlands.
The Renegade is back. Lorenzo Lamas is back. Wait, sorry.
In the form of the guy who played Hawk on Titans.
Who I quite liked.
I actually think he was really good in that show.
And this is good casting. This is a fun trailer. Like, this could be really dumb.
So when he died on Titans, I was like, oh man, that sucks. He was the best part of that show. Oh, he's going to be a Reacher. I'm fine with that.
They gave him his own freaking show.
They used the song Can You Hear Me Knockin', which is a great song for a Southern fried crime thriller. Thing.
And this feels very much like in tone with what the books are. So.
I think I started to read one of those books once, and it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
And this felt like what I was roughly seeing in my head.
Yeah.
He's kind of got the Punisher / Wolverine type confidence.
Yes. Yes.
Like, you know, people walk in, you know, and they'll have him surrounded, and he's all, you know, completely unafraid of them, talking shit.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a good line where it's like four people surrounding him. And they're like, you're about to get your ass kicked. He's like, no, I'm about to break three of your hands. He's like, there's four of us. Like, I want to use a drive to the hospital.
Yep,
yep.
It was a really good line.
Feels very much in line with the.
Yep.
So I'm excited for this.
It feels
one.
Like nothing a human being could ever say in real life, but a fictional man, sure.
I'm kind of looking forward
to
this, too.
I'm sure a drunk man has uttered it.
After getting got his ass
stomped.
I'm sure a drunk man has uttered it to the wall in the drunk tank. And then got his ass kicked by the wall.
Amanda Waller?
Yes.
Come over here, white boy.
Was that Amanda Waller in a Mortal Kombat game?
Yes, exactly.
She throws her chain at Sub-Zero.
Oh, throws an explosive collar at you.
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
Anyway.
What were we talking about?
Movie trailers.
Movie trailers.
So.
Jack Reacher.
Operation Fortune. No, Ruse de Guerre.
Yeah.
Which is Guy Ritchie's next movie.
Yep.
Which looks more in his, like, Man of Men from U.N.C.L.E. style.
Yeah.
It's big action-y.
Big frenetic action.
Jason Statham and Aubrey Plaza playing, like, spies working for Cary Elwes.
Yeah.
And they have... Hugh Grant is playing a billionaire arms dealer, which, by the way... And he is definitely in the same mode he was in The Gentleman, playing sort of a scumbag.
Yeah.
I adored him in The Gentleman. And so I loved every bit of it got here.
He was kind of a scoundrel scumbag of the streets.
Yeah.
As opposed to this one where he's like highfalutin scumbag of the
he's
arms
great.
Dealing. Oh, yeah, he's great.
They have to recruit a movie star who is this arms dealer's favorite movie star to infiltrate his thing. And the movie star they recruit is played by Josh Hartnett.
Which I haven't seen in a movie since Sin City.
And basically, it looks like a big heisty spy thing gone wrong. It was a lot of fun. It's very Guy Ritchie. It's very frenetic and goofy. And I could feel Dave sneering at it as we watched it.
I'm sneering at it just while you're talking about it.
Do you sneer more at this, or do you sneer more at John Wick?
This.
Oh, interesting.
John Wick I can just kind of ignore, but Guy Ritchie infiltrates my life. I have too many friends who are into Guy Ritchie.
Did you like The Gentleman?
I liked it okay. He has a speed, he has a style. It's frenetic. My brain doesn't love trying to process it when he's usually like 10 seconds ahead and moving on to the next scene while I'm trying to figure out what the fuck some limey guy said.
But you liked his Aladdin speed.
I liked that as like a Disney thing. As the Disney live actions one, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I've kind of realized that Guy Ritchie, like Tony Scott, is one of my favorite directors, so even his like B and C level efforts work for me. So I'm pretty excited about this.
Even that one with Madonna?
I've not seen the one with Madonna.
And of course, we know Randy loves King Arthur.
I loved King Arthur. It was so much fun.
King Arthur was
fun. There was
actually,
more elephants.
You know, I said that sarcastically because I thought that was one of the few you didn't like, but that's right. I loved it.
I finally watched it.
And you've come to like it.
I came to like it okay.
And I still hate it.
There were more elephants, Nick.
But yeah, I think I've had enough Guy Ritchie to last me the rest of my life.
Whereas I'm super excited for more Guy Ritchie. He made a movie this year I haven't seen yet. Man of Fortune or something like that. There was a Guy Ritchie movie with Jason Statham.
What do you call it? The movie Running Scared? Yeah. The kind of banter in that movie? That feels like the American version of it. And like if you put like Cockney accents and Quentin Tarantino juxtaposed time sensibilities on it, then you get Guy Ritchie.
Now I'm just imagining Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines with Cockney accents.
Well, even by the end of that movie, I think I was a little bit weary of the of their endless banter. And like that's like all the Guy Ritchie movies are.
But Dave, what about our banter? What about the Rogues banter?
Our banter's quality stuff.
Moving on to Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
This is one
I saw the first one in theaters because my son really likes Sonic, and it was kind of fun.
Jim Carrey in it?
Yes, yeah. Jim Carrey was basically the star.
Okay.
Jim Carrey is playing Dr. Robotnik.
But now he has his mustache.
So at the end of Sonic, he is sent out into space.
Yep.
And then comes back with all these gear, and now he's truly Dr. Robotnik.
Yep.
And Jim Carrey is super fun in this role. He just is.
Let me quick ask. Do you ever see Sonic's world in it? Our world.
Sonic starts in his world.
Okay.
And he has to flee his world.
It's a
world of rings.
But does it kind of look like the video games? Hills and rings and whatever?
And the rings are like teleport things. That's how he gets to our dimension stuff.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
But yes, it's Sonic. But also, like, they brought in Idris Elba playing Knuckles. Idris Elba seems to be just... I swear Idris Elba plays every role the same.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure they told him he was a hedgehog or an echidna.
Right. He was just doing a voice. He thought he was playing a mobster named Knuckles.
Yeah. He likes playing a mobster named Knuckles. So I think he's going to be very surprised when he sees this.
I just enjoyed the meme that showed after this trailer with James Marsden on the boat talking to Sonic. And he's like, and that's where Jean Grey killed me.
Yeah.
There's
a reference to X-Men.
Because he was Cyclops.
James Marsden is in this?
James Marsden is Sonic's human buddy.
Yeah. Oh, that's who that is. He looked familiar, but I haven't seen him in so long that I couldn't place him.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Sonic. You're either going to see it or you're not. I will probably see it because my son will probably want to see it, and it'll be enough fun. Jim Carrey is fun in these movies.
I haven't seen the first one, so I'm probably not going to see
this. He's very Riddler. In it.
We saw a trailer for The Lost City, which is Sandra Bullock playing a romance novelist, Channing Tatum playing the cover boy of her romance novels, who may somewhat think that he is the character from the novels.
Yep. And Daniel Radcliffe.
And Daniel Radcliffe playing a crazy billionaire who abducts her and wants to find the Lost City from her books. And then the cover boy comes to save her, and he's not very good at it.
No.
And Dave correctly called this, it's basically Romancing the Stone. In the modern day, Romancing Stone, another I think 40-year-old pop culture reference.
Yep. But everybody should see it because it's a perfect movie.
Yeah, very, very, very watchable movie with where Kathleen Turner played a romance novelist who kind of gets to live out the romantic adventure that she would had previously only been writing about.
Yeah, paired with Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
And then a fun supporting role by Danny DeVito.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, there also is Brad Pitt shows up in the trailer, which, by the way, they should not have given that away in the trailer, because it would have been amazing in context, I bet.
Yeah, I guess they probably figure it won't keep, they can't keep the lid
he's
on
probably
it.
Probably build that way anyway.
But, yeah, it would have been cool to be surprised by that in the thing.
I think there are certain actors that I will just go see a movie regardless. Yep. Sandra Bullock is one of those.
That actor is all of them.
Nick likes to press play.
I do like to press play, but Sandra Bullock is... I just like her a lot, so I'll just watch
this.
Whatever.
This looks potentially fun and potentially stupid, and I can't decide which one.
Yeah, I think it was like... It's a good trailer. There's a certain, like... The beats just feel familiar, that the style of comedy, like, where they almost fall off a cliff, and they're like, oh no!
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's just, like, such a standardized style of responses. I almost feel like it's, like, mad-libbed in there.
There was something about that to me. It's like, one of these... Nothing jumped out at me, but then again, you never know. It could be like Jumanji will surprise us.
Yeah. But it did look like all the actors were having fun, and it kind of had that sort of an infectious vibe to it. By that, I mean like Omicron infectious. No, I'm serious. It looked fun.
Okay, let's close with the two weird ones that I think we all were at least somewhat interested in.
Yep.
Everything Everywhere All the Time, which is Michelle Yeoh's multiverse story.
Yes. Story of seemingly one normal woman who's whatever age Michelle Yeoh is now. She's sort of
perfect,
transcendental,
timeless.
But 60...
Sure.
60? 60-ish?
Maybe.
Something in there?
I don't know.
Who seems to find out she plays some key role in some multiversal... What?
Defending from a threat. Like, she can...
Who is
she
some...
Can access all of her other lives.
From an infinite number of alternate dimensions.
Yeah.
This is all plays out in a very trippy and funny trailer that's... It actually looks like it could be, like, a little ambitious. Like, I feel like they may actually want to have something to say here. The fact that she is playing a sort of unlikely hero. She's definitely, like, although she's going to get some martial arts scenes... It doesn't look like a role that's, like, overplaying her as the badass.
Right.
She's, like, a normal person caught up in things.
Yeah.
Basically felt like Kung Fu Hustle meets Being John Malkovich or...
Into the Spider-Verse.
Into the
Michelle Universe.
Yes.
It's a good trailer.
It had googly eyes in it.
Little paste-on
googly eye things. I don't know what was happening all the time in it, but it looked good.
And then there is The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. We'd heard about this a little while back.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this. This is Nicolas Cage playing himself.
Yep.
Is that Neil Patrick Harris playing himself as well?
Probably so.
Basically, he's having some money troubles, and so he gets an offer from a rich man, played by Pedro Pascal, for $1 million to come down and be Nicolas Cage.
For his birthday party.
For his birthday party. Or maybe his daughter's birthday party.
Maybe so.
And then he's just being Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I don't quite know what...
Something happens.
Yeah, something happens.
They get caught up in, like, action-adventure-y tropes.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a lot of references to his various movies. There's people talking about his movies.
Yep.
The Croods 2 is referenced.
Yep.
There's a face-off wax version of Caster Troy.
Yep.
And he's like, I will buy that for $20,000.
Yeah, it's super fun. If you like
Cage
Nicolas
being
Cage.
Aware of his fandom, this seems like... maybe the most meta of the various... And he's done some other meta projects,
too.
But I think this one may be the big one.
Well, the trailer even says it's the most Nicolas Cage of all Nicolas Cage.
Will this be his JCVD?
Maybe.
But we didn't see Cage going full on Cage. It felt very
That is true. He felt
Cage.
More like...
He felt
maybe
like
he is in his normal life when he's not caging out, although I guess I thought he probably caged out about once every 30 minutes.
Yep.
He might not. It might just be the persona.
Maybe so. Sadness...
While he's buying dinosaur bones.
Well, okay, I feel better then.
All right, let's jump past trailers to other news. And let's start with The Acolyte, the Disney Plus Star Wars series that's coming out in... I don't know if it's 2022 or not.
Yeah, I don't think they've said.
So, it's a mystery thriller that it's during the High Republic era. And an acolyte is someone with force abilities who learns from a more experienced Sith Lord.
High Republic is that the... Wait.
That's the new
one.
That's the new era that they've created. where
there's that citadel where the Jedi have created.
Is it generally considered like an era of like when the Jedi were like at their peak?
I believe so.
Is that the idea? Like patrolling the galaxy, things are under kind of reined in. I know there's supposed to be issues there, but so this will be their first live action foray that shows that.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So this is Leslie Headland is the producer. I don't recognize the name, but the star is Amandla Stenberg, a non-binary person who is known for their lead role in The Hate U Give and was in Dear Evan Hansen. They were in the Hunger Games. Is it possible they were Rue in the Hunger Games?
Maybe.
I think it's possible.
Non-binary lead. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Huh. That's pretty notable. Is it an ensemble? Or?
They're going to be playing like the titular acolyte.
That's pretty big.
So, yeah. I'm sure
since Star Wars
I'm sure
has
the Star
had
Wars fandom, which is notoriously open
accepting,
to such things.
Yes. At least as much as the Star Trek community.
We'll have nothing to say about this.
other than praise.
Yes.
Star Wars has about as much LGBT representation as it does black people representation.
Yeah. And
which is to say there's about... it actually has less, I guess.
Amandla is, in fact, also African American.
Okay. I looked at some of the comics from the High Republic's era. It did not seem innately interesting to me. But live action may be able to pull it together, and those at least based on what we've seen of The Mandalorian, they've got a good track record on that one.
That's my expectation too. Because I was not super into the comics. I found that the Jedi are the least interesting thing about Star Wars for me. But this has my interest.
Right.
So, yeah. Another big sci-fi thing, Denis Villeneuve is going to direct Rendezvous with Rama.
Right.
Which is a
classic sci-fi
novel.
That's a famous
sci-fi
book that I haven't read. Anybody right here read it?
Nope.
A bunch of illiterates.
Yep.
Lately.
So yeah, it's right. a Arthur C. Clarke, published in 1973.
Yep.
And it involves a giant cylindrical starship that enters the solar system. And a group of human explorers intercept the ship to unlock its mysteries.
Arthur C. Clarke wrote 2001, right?
I believe that's correct.
So, okay, that's the pedigree that we're looking at. I don't know the tone, I don't know the vibe of that. I gather that puts him maybe a little more at the forefront of sort of cerebral sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah.
This
makes sense from the guy who did Arrival. That was Villeneuve, right?
It was.
Yeah,
yeah
I think it's just Villeneuve.
Villeneuve. I don't know how you pronounce his name.
No, Dave's right. It's Villeneuve.
Denis Villeneuve.
All right.
Yeah. I liked his Dune movie, but I wasn't as in love with it as many are.
I quite liked it.
It seems like he has a speed, and that speed is boring sci-fi. And so this perhaps will also fit him.
I think that's just boring to you, because I feel like we're constantly in the minority and everybody loves his work.
I really like Dune. I really like Blade Runner 2049.
I really like Blade Runner.
I really liked Arrival. So I think I'm a fan.
I was meh on Arrival.
I think there was something... I thought there was something else that I thought he did, but he didn't do it. It was Annihilation.
Yeah,
it wasn't
I keep on confusing Annihilation with him, too.
That's the Ex Machina guy.
Oh, yeah. Right, because that was boring.
That was.
No,
Annihilation
wasn't.
Was terrible.
Annihilation
was
had... I was pretty on board during the first half and very off board in the second half.
Yeah.
And retroactively liked Ex Machina less.
Yes, exactly. it was such a bad movie to me that I liked Ex Machina less as a result.
Did you like his TV show, Devs?
No, I thought it was boring and slow. I watched first half I was very interested. By the time I got to the ending, I hated it.
Alex Garland is not for you, then.
No, Alex Garland is definitely not for me. But Denis Villeneuve...
Denis Villeneuve. It's taken me forever to learn how to say that.
Denis V. My guy. Alex G. Not my guy. Denis V. My guy.
What were we talking about? Rendezvous with Rama. You gonna watch it, Nick?
Maybe. I like to press play, so probably so.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's too much to press play. I think I found out lately there's too much to press play on.
Sounds right.
Nick, you definitely have not found that out because you've watched some stuff lately.
I know, but there's like 20 things that I want to watch that are out right now, and then
if you're feeling a little overwhelmed, then there's probably too much to press play on.
Then there's like 5 more things this week.
Yeah.
Slow it down, people.
So some casting news.
Yep.
We got an image from the Orville season 3. which is coming out finally this year.
That got like what pandemic rammed, right?
So the new cast members include Ann Winters and Lisa Baines, who I don't know, but Bruce Boxleitner is playing like an alien.
Yeah, he's like under a lot of makeup and stuff there. So you know, we've talked about this show before. I think we all liked it. A little bit of cringe at some McFarlane elements, but overall, it's got the kind of it's pretty funny. It's got a good sense of heart. It definitely rips off Star Trek, but like with its heart on its sleeve.
Yep.
So I'm glad to see it. One interesting thing I thought in the comics that were coming out, who puts those out?
Dark Horse
puts them out. And I got the vibe that they may be previewing what the Hulu season is going to be like, because they were dropping the F-bomb in it.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Hulu will take the training wheels off the ratings and stuff a little bit. So I assume that means season 3 will be raunchier, or raunchier in a different way, or maybe like that. The comic, which was, I think, written, or at least some of the ones I've read that were written by, I think, show writers, still had that same vibe, though. It was still about Star Trek ideas, still had heart and all that. They just push the edge a little bit more. Anyway, I think that'll be fun to see.
Yeah, I
want to see Isaac drop the F-bomb.
Did you finish the second season, Dave?
No. I don't finish things.
I really enjoyed the second season.
Yeah, I
did
too.
A fantastic job with it. Speaking of casting, things that Dave wants to watch probably won't. House of Usher. Or the Fall of the House of Usher.
I've pretty much... I've watched... I didn't watch whatever the second one he did Blind Manor. But only because everybody told me it sucked, and also because my life's been topsy-turvy. But otherwise, it was actually on the plan to see over October.
They lied to you. It's great.
It's very good.
It's just not as good as the first one.
Right. And I know it has a different vibe. That's the thing. Is like, I'm not... Midnight Mass had a very different vibe from... Hill House.
No.
It was not as overtly scary. There was lots of scares and more scares in Hill House, but I still like Midnight Mass quite a bit, and I'm pretty sure I'll like Blind Manor. And so, yeah, now he's got Follow the House of Usher.
And they just announced the full cast.
Yep.
So it's Mark Hamill, Carlo Gugino, Carl Lumley, Frank Langella, Mary McDonnell, also Zach Guilford, Annabeth Gish, Kate Siegel, Rahul Cooley.
So plenty of his regulars.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, like, Frank Langella, am I correct that he played the, like, racist judge in Trial of Chicago 7?
Yep.
And honestly, he did a great job.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic.
He is playing the patriarch, Roderick.
Okay.
And Mary McDonnell plays his sister.
That fits. From what I understand, they are going to be, very heavily adapting, as he does anything he adapts, the Edgar Allan Poe story, but also working in a few other Poe stories, too.
Yep.
Like, well, his detective is going to be
there. Carl Lumley is playing legendary Poe investigator C. Auguste Dupin.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Which I just started reading that. The his first story is Murders in the Rue Morgue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to try and catch up on my Poe and see what, so I can see what they pick and chose. So.
Reading. You're gonna read
short stories, Randy. Short stories.
Oh,
even a Nimrod like myself can make it through the occasional short story. Although I read one that was called like the Black Cat or something like that. It's horrible. He stabs out a cat's eye in it.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
that's a little much.
And then tries to kill the cat later.
Oh,
it also features
Does the cat kill him?
Effectively, cool. In its way.
Cool.
It also features his entombment thing, which is a thing.
Is this like Tarantino's feet thing?
Absolutely. It's like he has at least three that I can think of stories that are about being buried alive.
Yeah.
And because Fall of the House of Usher is one of those stories, I half wonder if that Black Cat story might make its way in like as a dream sequence or something like that, as some sort of prophecy. But this is a weird cat.
I'm excited to see this. Mike Flanagan has not let me down yet.
Yeah.
And they said there's no date for it, but it's Netflix, which means, of course, now they've cast it, it'll drop some weekend in 2022 with no warning.
Yep. I mean,
I half expected Sandman to drop on Christmas Day or something. But
yeah, they're just going to drop these. I'm looking at all these previews, like, here's the shows that are coming next year, and I'm like, no, it's not. We have no idea what's coming next year. Netflix doesn't announce it anymore. It just shows up.
Yeah.
Flanagan's stuff is one of the few things that I will try and make time for, since it's usually like 6 or 8 episodes and done.
Yeah, but we do know that he's got another show before this one.
Does he?
Yeah, it's the about the kids in like a hospice.
Oh, that's
thing.
Right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
That one's supposed to drop first.
So that'll probably be this year's Halloween thing.
Know Maybe what so. That is.
I remember hearing about it.
Yeah, it's like an adaptation of like a novel. It features, I think, Heather Langenkamp as like the girl from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, that's who she actually is, but who is she in this?
She plays like a psychiatrist or one of the doctors of this group of kids.
Yeah, they're all like they had a near death experience or something, right?
They all basically decide to the first person who dies has to stick around.
Okay.
Yeah, no trailer just yet, but I know that is on the
horizon. That sounds pretty good, though.
The Midnight Club is what it's called.
Midnight Club, yeah.
He seems like I guess I did see a trailer for that or a teaser or something. I feel like was there not something?
I don't think so. There's just been news.
Okay. He seems like a guy who's a little uncomfortable with not adapting some pre-existing property, almost in the weird way Alan Moore is, like super talented writer, but he likes to either adapt Stephen, like with Flanagan, adapt Stephen King,
he's
adapt some famous story, like
Hush is not an adaptation, yeah,
but it's kind of a rarity. Like a lot of his other stuff is adaptations.
Well, Absentia,
And Ouija, I think.
Yeah,
but he, I think he's comfortable when he can adapt stuff.
Well, he's good at it.
Yeah,
it's true. Midnight Mass wasn't.
Midnight Mass is a reference. Yeah. It's riffing on a lot.
My brother figured out what was going on because he figured out immediately. He's like, this reminds me tonally of a Stephen King story.
Yeah,
and he was like,
Flanagan definitely has a Stephen King vibe to him.
Yeah, he does steal the beats.
All right, what else we got?
Michael Keaton is going to star as Batman in the Batgirl miniseries movie on HBO Max?
I think it's a movie for HBO Max.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that.
Is he still
going to
appear in Flashpoint or whatever?
Yeah. So they're.
I felt like they announced that 80 years ago.
They're starting to do this
only
a lot,
because time is.
Yeah. DC is starting to do this thing where basically they're trying to sort of like it all happened, which I think is probably a good way to go. I'm skeptical of it in the wrong hands, which of course is DC's hands. But in the right hands, like the movie we'll probably talk about later, it works out.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll finally figure out how to make that work. Maybe, like always, they'll look over and see what the other people are doing and figure out what to do.
Seeing Michael Keaton in the Batsuit sounds fun.
Yeah,
and
I'm all for it.
I think being involved in the Batgirl movie, which I'm actually excited for the Batgirl movie.
Who's playing Batgirl again?
You remember? They did announce, I can't remember her name.
Yeah.
But I know that like J.K. Simmons is going to be... Commissioner Gordon again. Yep.
If I get Keaton Batman, I need fat Commissioner Gordon. Even if that actor's dead.
How about ripped J.K. Simmons Gordon?
That was a weird one.
That was a weird one.
Leslie Grace is playing.
I don't know who that is.
He gave us a signal. That's the Gordon,
that's the Gordon
I need.
Want.
Yeah.
That Gordon is.
She
probably...
was in the Heights.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
Right. We did.
And
talk
then
about
it was also Brendan Fraser is playing Firefly.
Oh, right, which is cool.
Yeah, that's a cool
idea. That's a little scene Batman villain.
So we got two bits of comics news here. One is that Mark Waid is going to do a Batman Superman series in 2022. In fact, we've got the previews of it right now, which is kind of cool. It's going to be like sort of retro.
Retro how?
I think it is it's not in current continuity. I think it is
interesting. I remember seeing a little bit of preview art, and it like, you know, it looked retro a little bit, like a little bit more 80s era,
it's,
70s, 80s.
It's Dan Mora on the art, I think.
Yeah.
That's nice.
We all
like
Dan Mora.
That's the Claws.
Yeah, if he can't be doing more Claws, which I wish he was.
Yeah, what happened there?
I don't know.
He did a calendar one, and it killed it. It killed the vibe. No, yeah. I think the pandemic just... I also thought that maybe he was done. Morrison was just done.
He shouldn't be done. He could do those stories every year. There was so much stories.
I would like it if he did, but I can imagine he doesn't want to, like... Morrison is always moving on to the next big thing. He doesn't tend to return to any projects.
I know. And then Tom Taylor, who I think we would all probably nominate as the best writer in comics right now.
Yeah.
He has gone exclusive to DC as of this year. So that Dark Ages thing he's doing in Marvel will be a one-off. And then he's going to be doing Nightwing, Dark Knights of Steel, what else?
Superman, Son of Kal-El.
And then maybe another thing.
Yeah.
More deceased, I'm sure.
He showed a picture on his Facebook page recently of all the books that comics he wrote this year, and it was 40 different comics.
Yep.
The man is prolific.
But it's time to give him a Green Arrow book. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. I'll be down for that. Green Arrow, Justice League.
Yep.
I also wouldn't mind seeing some surprises from him.
Yeah.
You know, give him a character that's a little bit underused or...
Space Cabbie.
Sure.
All right, that's it for news. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. All right, we're talking comics for basically all of December 2021. We covered the first week, but this is the last 3 weeks of comics. We're going to jump a little bit. I'm just going to kind of throw things out. Batgirl's number one.
Yep.
This was a team-up of Stephanie Brown and Cassandra Cain.
And with Oracle Barbara Gordon. As the, I'm going to say, the den mother of them.
Moving into a new base of operations slash apartment.
Because her thing got blown up during Fear State.
Thanks to whatever that lady's
weird
name
hacker.
Was. Yeah, weird hacker.
Who is the villain of this piece.
Yep.
I kind of liked all this stuff when they were setting it up, like when Tinian was doing it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't super crazy about the new version.
I thought it had a little bit of charm, and I liked the art quite a bit.
Yeah.
Its vibe was kind of Girls' Night Out.
Yeah.
And a little bit less. I usually look for a little bit more serious superhero, like that espionage vibe that the old Birds of Prey had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is my favorite vibe for it.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think, like, I feel like this would be a good vibe maybe for the a younger set of readers,
mm-hmm.
but it's not quite what I'm looking for.
Which, maybe the point. It's for people who like the Batgirl of Burnside, that kind of stuff, so.
I like Batgirl of Burnside better.
With a look, if you like the Batgirls.
Yeah.
There was also Cloaked, a new Dark Horse book that basically had was it a journalist who discovers a vigilante's identity or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked this one. It was a fun take on the sort of urban vigilante thing.
I didn't read it, Randy. Just a quick question. Is it set in a world that had superheroes, or is it like kind of like more or less like our world, but if there had been a
feels
some
more
Batman
like, more like our world that had a vigilante in it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's a fun one. It's not goofy, but it does have a bit of a sense of humor, but it's sort of a dark story.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I'll be curious to see where it goes. Dark Horse has had a few of these, like Last Flight Out and some sort of good high concept stuff lately.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers Forever was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You just read that, right?
Yeah, it's just fun kind of, I would say, like post-apocalyptic Avengers story focusing on a world's last archaeologist.
I was led to believe from the solicit that it was maybe the dark apocalyptic future of a world that hadn't really had heroes or something. And so they have to reach out to other universes, other timelines, and pull Avengers and heroes from those timelines to help them or something?
Yeah, there's like a Thor's hammer in this world and a couple of other small things. But their version of Tony Stark, which is the kind of archaeologist, is like created little bits of technology here and there, but not to the extent of like a full Iron Man suit for himself. He does have some like Pym particle type stuff, which he calls Stark particles.
Is the world apocalyptic because some environmental thing happened or a nuclear war?
No,
or
like a villain.
Okay.
Yeah, rose up, killed the heroes that were there, and kind of took over.
Huh.
It's an interesting concept. I feel like better than what Millar did for Old Man Logan.
Okay, all right.
This is
Jason Aaron, right? He's writing current
Avengers. Yeah. But this has that kind of feel to it.
Okay.
I like the art. I forget who the art was.
Is this and also Avengers Forever?
Oh, it's Aaron Cooter, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. It is. And his style looked somewhat different. It seemed like he was blending a little bit of his style, which was kind of in that same vein as who's the guy? Frank Quitely.
Yeah.
Was getting a little John Cassaday-ish, maybe. In layout or something.
There was also a weird kind of duo in here where it's Ghost Rider, the Robbie Reyes, but this is more of like actual Ghost Rider taking over the body of a dead Robbie Reyes, which is weird. And he's partnered with a Deathlok. I don't know if it's the Deathlok.
Man, Deathlok is in this week's Timeless, too.
Yeah.
It seems like Deathlok is somebody really likes Deathlok.
I think it's one of those a little bit like, as certain creators like the Eternals, there's Deathlok is one of those characters, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah. But Deathlok, unlike the Eternals, isn't boring.
I can't say I can think of any Deathlok stories I was particularly into.
Dwayne McDuffie wrote a really good picture.
Yeah,
Deathlok
he did.
Series.
And also the Beyond, which I guess was McDuffie.
Yeah, Beyond,
anyways.
Which was also McDuffie.
Yeah, that was the only
Dwayne
one
McDuffie
I could, that was the only
him,
one
yeah.
I could think
yeah.
of.
There's a new Ms. Marvel called Ms. Marvel Beyond the Limit. It's by a YA author. What's my last name's Ahmed. I can't remember her first
oh,
name.
Oh, yeah. Samira
Ahmed. Has nice art in it, too.
Yeah. I'm always kind of a little wary of anybody tackling Ms. Marvel other than
G. Willow Wilson. Yeah.
But the vibe on this one felt more in line with that, with a little bit more kind of. There's this upbeat
nature. She's like visiting a friend or a relative in Chicago. Yeah.
And who the friend or the relative is like working on some sort of technology that like is digging wormholes into. Alternate realities, so she like sees versions of herself from all of this.
Yeah,
there's some weirdness with her powers now, which I wasn't aware of, but I haven't read a Ms. Marvel comic in a while.
I heard that it had some crazy Bollywood musical.
There is a Bollywood musical in this, which actually
don't bury the lead, Nick. That's what I'm there for.
I like the fact that this was very user friendly. It kind of caught you up with everything you needed to know. Even if you haven't read a Ms. Marvel book since G. Willow Wilson left.
Makes sense. It's an issue number one. That's always smart to try and play it that way.
What I liked about it most was a lot of fun, and I appreciate that.
There was also speaking of Timeless was this week.
Yes,
which is a basically a Kang story.
Who's your favorite villain, right, Randy?
It previews some stuff that's going to come up Marvel this year, but also basically is sort of a Kang finds this like orphan timeline that is trying to rejoin ours and goes and deals with it. He's got a like villain historian that he's brought along with him.
Well, yeah, as a villain historian that's about to write a book about Doom and how Doom is the best.
Yeah, and he comes in and he's like, Doom sucks,
Doom sucks, I'm the best. Yeah. And to prove it, he takes him through time showing just how badass Kang is.
By the way, I think it was Busick and Carlos Pacheco in the original Avengers Forever who added in the notion of Kang with these two like big guns.
Yeah.
And that's now a thing that he, like, they've made him more of a badass.
Yeah.
Which I think was a good call.
Yep.
Like, he's cool in here. They do a thing where, like, this is an interesting take on Kang where they basically, the guy's talking about him, and he's like, he goes back to, like, the prehistoric times and fights a mammoth with a spear and no technology. And he's talking about basically Kang, he almost gives him a little bit of a Kraven spin. He's like, yeah, Kang could easily stay here in prehistoric times, conquer the Earth, and just rule it forever. But he doesn't want to do that because that's not where the challenge is.
Yeah.
Which is a good way to explain why a guy with time travel can't just win everything. It's like, oh, he does actually, he wants to prove himself, and he doesn't want to be a god, he wants to be a man who overcomes gods.
Yeah.
There's some neat sort of reframing of Kang, I think, that made him a stronger villain.
And there's a splinter timeline that is very dark.
Yep.
And an ending that is interesting, I will say. If this is what I think it is, it's an interesting kind of big teaser towards the end.
Yeah, it was a weird thing to see coming back. But yeah, it's just a one shot. It is sort of one of their big event things, and I really enjoyed it. I did not expect to enjoy it as much as I did.
We should say that it is written by Jed McKay.
Oh right, that's right. I forgot McKay writes.
So he does have a pretty good handle on.
Yeah, McKay's been doing Moon Knight and Black Cat,
and with a fairly good stable of artists, because there are multiple people who work on this. It's Kev Walker, Greg Land, Jay Leiston, Mark Bagley, and Andrew Hennessy.
It's all good art. Yeah. It was a fun. Given that there's just not a lot of stuff out this particular week, this is sort of the must-have of the week, I would say. Also out this week, we've got Swamp Thing Green Hell, which is a big black label book from Jeff Lemire and Doug Mankey on art.
It's kind of an apocalyptic setting.
Yeah, it's a apocalyptic. Basically, Swamp Thing rises up to clear out humanity out of the world.
Doug Mankey's.
And there's it's a setting where like environmental devastation has like left it. So there's literally almost like one big sort of mountainous island, which is the only remaining real place for home for humanity.
Yep.
Like is a single mountain.
It's very
and waters, you know, everywhere else.
It's very dark and horror-y, so which is a nice callback to sort of Swamp Thing's roots.
Yep.
His roots. Get it?
Like the band.
Yes.
Like the roots.
There is it's worth mentioning that we got the Batman Fortnite Foundation one shot. Second printing back in, so if you missed that, I did sell it quickly. The second printing is back in. Batman One Dark Night, which is Jock writing and drawing another black label book.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, a power outage happens, and Batman has to sort of fight his way through Gotham one block at a time, kind of like a Judge Dredd kind of thing.
Yeah, slash The Raid.
Yeah,
slash anything like that.
And then I guess there was, I don't know if we have any other single issues. I mean, there's stuff this week. I want to, you know, Devil's Reign is out this week and it's great. I think we've all been enjoying that. There's several hardcovers. DC started putting a bunch of hardcovers out. They did the hardcover for Rorschach and Strange Adventures. So if you're a Tom King fan, there's two new Tom King books.
There's one of the best books that have come out in a while, getting a hardcover collection.
Yep.
And that is Spider-Man Life Story.
Yep, that's this week. It comes out with the Chip Zdarsky, Mark Bagley. And
it also includes the annual with J. Jonah Jameson.
Yep.
If you're a Spider-Man follower or Marvel follower of any stripe, chances are we've recommended it to you at some point in the last year.
And if we hadn't, just slap us. We suck.
Well, I'm glad it's back in print, because it's been out in print for a while. So very happy to have that back in print. There's also the first volume of the new Harley Quinn is an hardcover. And unfortunately, we're between printings on it right now. Well, we're between stock on it, hopefully. The Nightwing hardcover, the first Tom Taylor, which I think was everybody's favorite story of the year.
Oh, man, so
good. The hardcovers came in, sold out. It's out from one distributor, but we think we're getting it from another one in a couple of weeks. So if you have not got a chance to get to read it, definitely ask us to put that one on hold for you when it comes back in, because it is definitely, it's my favorite book of 2021 by
a wide margin. I was going to say, it's probably the best.
I'd have to think about it.
And that is, since it is kind of a light week, we went ahead and put up our best of 2021, some of our options, graphic novels up on the new wall. So when you come in, you can check out some of the stuff that we think is worth reading.
Yeah, there's probably at least 20 or 30 graphic novels up there that are cool stuff we think to hit this year.
Anything else comics-wise?
Nope. No, I think that was it.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about the French Dispatch and Spider-Man. All right, so big spoiler warning here. If you have not seen Spider-Man No Way Home and have somehow remained unspoiled, you should continue to remain unspoiled and not listen to the rest of this podcast.
If you have any love at all for the MCU, I feel like this is one of their strongest movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a big, cool capper to the Spider-Man trilogy that also sets up its own new status quo. Really, lots and lots of big things happen in it, and not just big things, but like very emotional things. It's got a lot going on, and you should see it and not get it spoiled. Don't read the wiki on it or something.
Right, for sure.
Unless you're one of those weirdos who just does that.
However, if you have seen it, Nick has finally passed the spoiler barrier.
Yeah, took me a while, but
I'm good. So we're going to spoil it and talk about it. So this is your spoiler warning. Again, do not listen if you have not seen the movie. Please, trust me. All right, so there was a meme going around before this came out that was like, hey, do I need to see Spider-Man 1 and 2 and 3 and then Spider-Man 1 and 2 before I see, and then Spider-Man 1 and 2 before I see Spider-Man 3?
Yeah.
And you kind of do. I mean, you don't have to, because I haven't seen two of those movies. But
did you not see the Andrew Garfield?
I've never seen Spider-Man 3. I've never seen Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I don't think you necessarily.
You don't actually have to.
No.
But they reference everything.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Like, more so than Spider-Verse, they really brought everything together here.
I think if you kind of, like, and they even tell you this in case you don't know it, but if you... one of the big things with the Garfield movies that they mention is, say, like, that he failed to save Gwen Stacy.
Yep.
Right? So that's a big thing that hangs over him. And, indeed, so let's, but before we get into the multiple Spider-Men, because they don't actually all appear in the movie until, what, halfway point?
Halfway through, yeah.
Or even a little past that, maybe? Let's say what's going on here. And when it starts out, Peter Parker has been outed by J. Jonah Jameson.
They did the clever opening credits. They played the last, like, what, 5 minutes of the previous movie?
The last minute or so.
Yeah.
Right, the big reveals, and then it shows the aftermath, where his life is in fact completely upended.
Yep.
There's some supporters, but a lot of haters. Yep. A lot of people think he killed Mysterio. He can't have a normal life.
I actually thought it was interesting that they they did away with that fairly quickly. That, like, the trouble of him, like, did Spider-Man terrorize all of London? Like, They get away from that very quickly. They're like, no, everybody knows. And it was very quickly turned into a crazy Alex Jones conspiracy thing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a good way to handle it. It's maybe a little bit of a cop-out, but I thought it was a good way to solve it. We don't have the whole of the time of, like, everybody being like, Spidey killed. Mostly it's just that everybody knows he's Peter. Like, that's the big thing. It's not that he successfully tricked people into thinking that he used the drones.
Well, he did have a very good lawyer.
Yes, he did. So, I should say, I was wrong on two counts, and never been happier to be wrong.
And Nick was right?
And Nick was right. Nick and Anna were both right. I was so sure that Charlie Cox thing was a fake-out thing, but no, in fact, It was what it looked like, and they it brought in Charlie Cox as Daredevil. It felt very weird
for Kevin Feige to say, you know, Charlie Cox will be our Daredevil whenever we get to it. And it...
Well, what's weird is, with him and D'Onofrio, the question now is, what does that mean for Netflix continuity?
Right. Do the what are they keeping? What are they not? Is there anything they're not keeping?
I haven't seen any. I mean, people have been careful about spoilers on my feed, at least. So I haven't seen anybody talk. I've seen no art interviews. No. Surely someone has asked Kevin Feige about this.
I'm sure, but he's playing it close to the vest, as always, probably.
So my guess, and now my guess is I don't trust anymore. My guess is that they're going to do a thing where it's like, yes, the Daredevil Kingpin thing stuff happened, but the Netflix stuff is not exactly in continuity.
Yeah, I mean, my brain says that those are sort of variants of, like, whatever the MCU version of Daredevil. And they can go back and retroactively show his...
I think they may reference the stuff that, like, they may reference the hallway fight at some point because it worked.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think that they'll, like, whole hog reference all the stuff because I don't think...
If they were to say all of the Netflix stuff happened... Would the only real big problem be Iron Fist?
Yes.
Yeah.
And is there any way that they could do some good movie version of it that would, you know, maybe with him just as a supporting character in Shang-Chi 2?
No.
That they could redeem it?
The only way they can redeem Iron Fist is that in the second season, I think, or did they have a second season of Iron Fist?
No. I don't think they did.
Late in the first season, I believe the ending is that Jessica Henwick winds up as the Iron Fist. So Colleen Wing has Iron Fist.
Yeah.
And she's great. And if we had that Misty Knight and that Colleen Wing and she was Iron Fist and we just never saw Danny Rand again, I think I'd be okay with that.
I also would be okay with somebody else playing Danny Rand and it's just recasting. That was just a recasting, a variant of version of. We're getting to the point where that's fine in this multiverse that we're that people have accepted.
I don't know if they're gonna bring it up. I can't consider any of it canon until they say it's canon.
Right.
But I did think
it's that... It's moving closer to canon.
But it is moving closer. It's a lot closer than I ever thought it would be. But at the same time, there was something in Hawkeye that basically uncanonizes Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. unless it's a big recast.
Right. That's true.
In fact,
true.
It isn't a recast. It'd be a completely different character. So different character. They basically have effectively said Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not canon.
Which is fine.
Yeah, I'm good with that. But the Netflix stuff, I'm not... They've just muddied the waters a bit, and I'm just not expecting it. But... The scene with Daredevil was great.
Yes.
Just, like, having him show up was really cool.
And then catching
him. He's like, I'm a really good lawyer.
I'm a really good lawyer.
So, Nick, you did not see this with a super reactive audience, unfortunately.
No, I didn't. I mean, they were reactive, but it was a smaller theater. It was a sold-out theater.
Yeah.
But it wasn't full. I mean, people were getting up after, like, the end credits. They didn't even stay for the mid-credits or the after credits. That's crazy.
We were opening night, of course, and people went nuts when Andrew Garfield showed up.
Yep.
Right.
They cheered for all the major arrivals.
Yeah.
And weirdly,
Daredevil didn't get it.
People did.
They?
Okay. At least there was a surge of, whoa.
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
For sure there was. And also a big sad sigh when Andrew Garfield said he was the worst Spider-Man.
Yeah, poor guy.
Here's the thing. Those movies I didn't like at the time. I don't even know if Andrew Garfield was one of my favorite actors. But since then, he's really, like, shown himself to be really good in, like, various movies that I've seen him in.
Well, here's the thing.
And he's matured as an actor.
I never thought it was his fault. It's always... No. It was the writers. It's always been the writers.
Who directed those? Was it Mark Webb?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They for sure, I don't want to quite say redeemed those movies, but they showed that it's kind of what the comics have always done. It's like, you can have a bad run, or a weak character, or just, some writer who screwed things up, and then, somebody can come back and write that character again later and just do a good job with it.
Yeah. Honestly, I thought they did. The idea that his character basically gave into his rage and became sort of this darker Spider-Man, almost akin to, maybe not as dark as, like, what is it, the Assassin Spider-Man from Spider-Geddon?
Maybe a little bit more like, what, I don't know, Ben Reilly or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
It made him a ton more interesting.
It did. And he was...
Well, he actually... But he had, like, a lot of funny moments, too.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
When MJ, like, basically wants him to prove that he's Spider-Man crawling around on the ceiling.
Crawling ceiling.
And
it's like, I'm not going to do that. This is enough.
But he still does it.
In the corner?
Ned having Sorcerer Supreme or magic leanings was super fun, I thought.
Yep. Speaking of Sorcerer Supreme, I just have to say it because I think it's amazing that Wong is the Sorcerer Supreme.
On a technicality, Nick.
Only because Steven was blipped.
I loved everything. I love that Steven can't just admit it. But he's like, no, it's a technicality. It's only because I was gone. I'm like, he's still been Sorcerer Supreme for 5 years, man.
But what does that mean for his... Was he just, like, training random people in Shang-Chi since he was, fighting?
I don't
but
know.
But helping Abomination?
Like, it sort of reframes, like, what he's doing in some play. Because he's in post-credit sequences. He's in movies. He's guest starring.
That's why he was in the post-credit sequences. That's why he was called on. Because he's, like, the number one guy.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing.
It's a neat thing to do, given that the origin of the character, like, literally in the comics, was, like, kind of the racist idea of, like, an adopted manservant from some foreign country where he comes and is devoted to the white savior who exceeds him.
The MCU Wong is a fantastic character, and I'm glad that they're giving him more to do.
There was a point, like, early on where he's, early to midway, where Peter begins trying to capture the villains who are coming through from other dimensions and are drawn to him, and they're being held in the sort of basement of Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum.
Yep.
And I got a little nervous that the movie was gonna spend too much time in like the dank basement of Doctor Strange. Yeah. And just kind of talk with the villains talking to the heroes. But I like the basic idea that Peter was trying to save them, which goes into overdrive in the second half.
Yeah.
And becomes a huge thematic because Aunt May has something to say about it, and becomes the second half is so strong that it kind of wiped out the fears I had in that for a little while at the midpoint.
Also, there was when he first fights Octopus and he takes over his arms.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
Oh man!
But I was also like, this might be a little too goofy. I was a little like, you may have just neutered Doctor Strange, like you or Doctor Ock. You might have just made him a little bit too.
But at the same time, I was expecting, like, oh, we're going to get, like, a battle royale, but just with the new effects of these movies. And then I was like, oh, what? It seems like they have something different in mind.
Yeah.
And I did like that they got to do something different. And Ock, because he had been the kind of smartest before he went mad, the friendliest of the villains with Peter, that he was the one kind of generally figuring things out in their imprisoned thing, and he made for a good spokesperson for the villains.
I thought their use of Willem Dafoe was fantastic. Like, having him show up as Green Goblin, and then basically
sort of broken personality that he had.
But he shows up first as, like, Green Goblin. He throws a goblin bomb, and the next time we see him, May has, and it's him as, like, this broken homeless dude.
Yeah.
And he is basically the guy helping out.
At Feast.
I love that Feast was in there. Yeah. Yes. It was so
cool. That is to say, Aunt May's homeless shelter of charity.
That's a Dan Slott invention, by the way.
Yeah. That's made his way into the video game, too, right?
Game
so,
too.
Yeah, it's pretty official now.
And it makes more sense for young May than it did for older May, so it actually fits better.
Yeah, agreed.
I also like, there's lots of little nods here. There's the, I'm a bit of a scientist myself line, which I loved. There was Jamie Foxx almost stole the movie as this new Electro.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And I love that when we see him, we get the little face shield thing. Like they redesigned everything. Like even their Willem Dafoe's Goblin, where he's like looking, he's got a little shabby and thing, but it looks like the Goblin.
A little bit.
I would have
preferred a more closer Goblin.
I feel like about all they needed was the mask, I would have been pretty happy.
But he did the pose and stuff.
Oh yeah,
and he also they wanted to let Willem Dafoe. He is such a good like on screen presence that they wanted to let him do his thing.
Thomas Hayden Church.
He already has Goblin face in other words.
Thomas Hayden Church is Sandman coming back.
They didn't do a ton with him, but I like what they did.
Well, I liked that since all of these had to be villains who had some shot at redemption.
Yeah,
and that sort of uniquely worked with everything that had happened in the Raimi and Garfield movies.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Thomas Hayden Church was a guy who, like, he basically was, like, trying, it was, like, kind of a, not deadbeat dad, but he was trying to do right by his kid in that. It's just that he was a lunkhead and a thug, and he kind of did it in stupid ways.
Yeah.
And I thought that they handled that well, where he was, like, he occasionally was a problem because he just didn't want to wait out what Peter
was
doing.
He's like, they're all going to die, I want to go home.
Just send me back. Yeah. And I was like, That's how his brain works. It actually makes sense for him.
Yeah.
But I thought this was the best sort of, in some ways, the most heroic, best superhero-y thing that they'd done in any of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
That he was trying to save his villains. Like, that's as Spider-Man-y, as superhero-y as you can get.
Yep. I really liked what they did with the three Spider-Men. I liked they were all different.
When they do all show up and start talking and comparing experiences, it's really good.
The bit about that,
They even poked fun a little bit at some of the melodrama of it.
But it reminded me a little bit of Spider-Verse, the bit where Miles loses his uncle, and they all show up and they're like, look, we're the only people in the world who understand this. It was the same way. He had just lost May, and these two other Spider-Men show up, and they're like, no, I actually know exactly what you're going
through. Which I'm so glad that that did not get spoiled for me.
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing,
and I actually didn't even think it was on the table.
No, I didn't even consider. She's always just been there. But the
genius of the movie is that it reframed something that I didn't think they were going to bother to do.
Yep.
Which is to say, she became the new Uncle Ben.
Yep.
Uncle Ben was still a meaningful person to him. Stark was still a meaningful person, but the most meaningful person to him was Aunt May. And that was like such a good fit for it, and such a good rethink that they essentially allowed them to rebuild the character and have him. A sort of late era origin thing that sort of made him closer to the Spider-Man we know.
Well, and I think this thing, a lot of people have been complaining for a long time about this, that they don't like that him as Tony Stark Jr. They don't like that Tony Stark's in there. No one has ever mentioned Uncle Ben. And this movie was about the realization of, oh, no, we've been watching the birth of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, Tom Holland has been Spider-Kid for these first two movies. Like, as much as we all liked him, he wasn't Spider-Man. He's been the MCU Spider-Man. And by the end of this movie, he's Spider-Man.
Yeah,
in suit.
That was pretty clever, because that's something else I didn't think was on the table.
Oh, I didn't think they were going
to. I knew that
it
was going to be an entertaining movie, but I didn't think they were going to sneak in, make me realize that we've essentially been watching a three-movie origin that was actually all very satisfying and not just the standard origin.
Yeah. Well, and also,
I don't know if they had any sense of that when they were doing movies one and two.
No, they just
but this is a perfect example, again, of doing what the comics do, which is, If you look back at what's been set up for you and follow it in the right way, you can make it feel like it was all pre-planned and ingenious.
And that's why Infinity War and Endgame worked, is because they went back and looked and say, what did we set up by accident? And they played it all together. And they did the same thing here with Spider-Man. I thought May going was rough, because you can kind of see it coming a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, once that she's, like, in that building and she's running, and, like, the Goblin's talking about it, and you're like, oh man, he's gonna kill her. And then they fake you out, because it's like, she gets up, she seems to be okay.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, they're not gonna, oh, I thought they just faked us out, they're not sure gonna kill her. And then she starts giving the power responsibilities, she's, oh shit, she's dead.
Yeah. I was definitely like, there's no way she got up from that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the glider just hit her dead on.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Also, it lets them pay out a thing with, like, Spidey at the end. They got to redeem all the Spider-Men. So Andrew Garfield gets to save MJ, and what is he, really satisfying and emotional and cool. Like, the way he played that when he puts her down, it's like, he has just had this, like, awakening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, like, super cool. And then Tobey Maguire, who basically, his Spidey killed Green Goblin when he didn't want to.
He saves him
from the glider this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
But we also get the realization that Toby has gone on to be a Spider-Man. He's gotten together with MJ.
Yeah.
They definitely have a life together.
There's some little nods that, yeah.
Yeah, I was. I actually was. I would have loved to have seen, although it would have been a little too Avengers Endgame, maybe. I would have loved to have seen a brief spot with MJ with Kirsten Dunst.
It would have been cool.
But
I'm also, you know, we didn't get their Venom. We didn't get the Eric, who's the guy who played Topher Grace. Topher Grace.
I'm happy about that.
The one
presumably, like it still kind of works. Like, he was probably out there somewhere. Yeah. Like, other people were coming through the.
He was probably in the, because there were a bunch of silhouettes.
Well,
in the sky.
I saw Kraven and I saw Rhino.
Yeah, I saw those two. And I saw somebody say Scorpion, and I'm
yeah,
like,
I think
yeah,
Scorpion's
that makes
sense.
In there. Rhino did appear in the Amazing Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, he's in the
Paul
second
Giamatti.
One, I think.
But
the other Scorpion and Kraven didn't, did they?
No, okay. But they're coming in whatever version
from Sony.
Yeah.
I also like that they're putting the shield on the Statue of Liberty, which feels exactly like the kind of thing.
Which showed up in Hawkeye.
Yeah, it did. It was referenced.
Any complaints?
I have a mild complaint. I understand why they didn't do it, but you had the Sinister Five. You couldn't bring in Vulture or Mysterio somehow for just 1 second just to get a Sinister Six.
Eddie was there. He just didn't make it to New York. he was too busy getting drunk.
Why they didn't? Because you know, the Sinister Six is traditionally a unified organization kind of thing, like that are with a goal.
Yeah.
And these guys kind of all had different goals and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't talk about the Lizard much at all, which I feel like Lizard did get kind of short shrift here.
Actually, it was more interesting than
I was shocked too, because I did not even remember that he had this British voice.
Yeah, that's Ry Syphons.
And yeah. Who's that?
British actor, been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
You would recognize him probably.
But I was like, man, I saw that first movie, and I don't even remember that.
He's in the second one, isn't he?
No, he's the first one.
Okay. First, yeah, right. Second one was mainly
Electro.
And, yeah.
Which they did do his musical cue when he first showed up.
His dubstep?
Yeah, his dubstep stuff. I was like, oh, God. And then they kept mentioning the eels, and I'm like, it's such a hokey origin story.
And they're making fun of it the whole time.
Yeah, he and Sandman talk, right? He's like, I fell into a vat of nuclear sand. He's like, I fell into some electric eels.
We should look where we fall. Or
yeah.
Also, I want to talk about Doctor Strange in this.
Yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch does a really good job of being an a-hole while also trying to be helpful.
Benedict Cumberbatch plays a better Doctor Strange in all the other movies than he did in the actual Doctor Strange movie. I feel like it's just like Hemsworth and Thor.
Is it possible that he is like finally found himself as the character?
Yes.
Because in that first one, it's not fully formed.
But I don't think that's necessarily him. I think he could have played that character. But I think, like Hemsworth, like the first Thor movie just treated him very seriously.
They just didn't know what to do with
him. He only had a few moments where he really Vikinged out and was like, again, or another.
Yeah. Because the stuff here with him, like when he soul ejected Peter and Peter's body was still reacting because of his spider sense.
Yeah.
Was keeping the box away.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. But I thought all the Doctor Strange effects of, like, the mirror world and stuff was really cool.
It was interesting for them to use that again because they haven't really touched on that again.
And they also managed to, by the way, do the old heroes fight each other thing without making it feel like the same old.
No.
Like when two heroes just, like, run into each other and they're like, oh, he must have been the cause. Let's start fighting.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really make sense.
Although he did leave him stranded over the Grand Canyon for 12 hours.
Yeah, no, but that made sense, though.
Yep.
It was one of those things where, like, their superhero versions of, like, a clash of ideologies are different than how it is in the real world. Theirs turn into big physical confrontations, and I thought this was a good example of how to do it right.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it felt like something like, oh, that's pretty messed up, like, what he did to Doctor Strange.
Yeah, it is.
Like, but, like, for him, lives were on the line, and so, like, that took precedence, so...
Yeah, I thought Benedict Cumberbatch did a great job here, and I thought it was a good.
And he also showed like warmth when he needed to, especially near the end and stuff.
And I thought the relationship with MJ and
Ned,
and Peter was great.
Mm-hmm.
The scene on top of the school with them together,
yeah.
It just felt very kind of organic.
Yeah, I've heard rumors that Zendaya has not confirmed whether or not she's coming back, which would be kind of a shame because I think she was great as MJ.
I think she'll come back. I don't think they need MJ in the next one.
Yeah.
I think just doing a Spider-Man movie, still kind of on his own a little bit.
By the way, the big thing at the end, the erasing his memories, and that they managed, again, they did the one more day that everybody hated in a way that worked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was giving up something to save something. He was giving up something to save the reality. It wasn't
it wasn't just
I would like Aunt May to have two more years of life.
Right. It was, I'm saving the world.
Yeah.
And that means...
And basically, now Peter is Peter Parker. He doesn't have any money. He doesn't even have a high school diploma.
True.
He's going to have to get his GED because nobody remembers he was in school.
He's got an apartment.
Doesn't have any friends. He's got a random apartment. Which, by the way, I'm pretty sure that apartment is a nod to either one of the movies or the comics or something. The way they shot it...
I half expected the Russian guy to come out.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting that, too.
I would have liked to have seen it.
The way they shot that apartment, though, was definitely as a, hey, look, it's this apartment. I definitely got a vibe of, this is a reference I didn't quite get.
I mean, for all I know, it might have been the apartment that Tobey Maguire used.
It could have been. But, and then at the end, we see that he's sewn his own costume, and that it looks like the comic perfect costume.
Yeah. The vibrant blue, the vibrant red.
Yeah, it was so perfect. I really loved it. They've gone to Peter Parker. And Spider-Man still hated and feared because of J. Jonah Jameson.
Yep.
Like, They basically gave us the Marvel Spider-Man that a lot of people have always wanted.
Which J.K. Simmons is amazing at.
He's great.
Such a despicable character, but he gives it such a good life.
This is not a J. Jonah Jameson who, at his heart, might be a decent
guy. He's a crusading newspaper man. No, he's just a... He's selling supplements. He's basically Alex Jones.
Yes. That's he's hilarious. Literally going to be the guy who bankrolls Scorpion or something to kill Spider-Man.
By the way... One minor thing that I did really enjoy, when they go back to the school before they've gotten to the, like, the heart of the movie, and they've got this teacher characters, and it was like, one of them was like, had gone all fan, well, one of them especially had gone all fan, Martin Starr had gone all fanboy and made the case. But I love that Hannibal Buress is the same guy who, when he put up the video of Captain America, he's like, pretty sure the guy's a war criminal now, but whatever. He is like, Mysterio was right.
Yep.
And they're talking about how he's a conspiracy theorist. And I like that because it basically, it frames that of like, oh, okay, so nobody seriously buys that Peter Parker, that Spider-Man kills anyone. Like, Spider-Man is a hero and people know it.
Yeah.
But it's just enough that he's a controversial figure.
Yep.
Right.
I thought it was a really, it's a tricky needle to thread, and I thought they threaded it very nice.
I agree.
There was the post-credits with Venom. Very happy to learn that on this at least I'm right.
Hulk Venom has a shit name.
Venom is not in our universe.
But the symbiote is now.
Yes, that's fine. I'm good with that.
And he was briefly in the universe.
He was briefly in the universe. But not.
What does he say? Iron Man and then Hulk. And doesn't he like say like, and you think we had a shit name?
Yeah, he does. He's like Hulk's a shit name. Venom is a shit name. Also, I love that his bartender was Danny Rojas.
Yes, it was.
Little Ted Lasso of the Marvel Universe, which is great.
And then the after credits was the trailer for Doctor Strange 2, which I'm super excited for.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other day, Nick, when you mentioned that trailer had dropped for Doctor Strange 2, I was trying to keep myself from saying... Yeah, I've seen it, or at least some version of it, but I didn't want to say where I had seen it.
Well, I went and told you that one because I was like, in case you don't want to stay, that is all there is.
That Kaylee loves Wanda.
Yeah,
she really enjoyed WandaVision and really likes that actress.
Yeah,
So I knew she would enjoy that, seeing that she's going to be more important to
that's gonna be the a universe. Big part.
And, and we get to see, like, America Chavez.
Yep, and what looks like the What If Doctor Strange. I'm not sure that's him, but I think it might be.
I don't think it is.
You don't think so?
No.
It's another sinister Doctor Strange?
But that guy had a redemptive arc. You can't, like, retroactively go back and redo that.
No, but, I mean, he's always sinister, even when he's a redemptive arc. Because he says, he's like, things just get out of hand.
So right.
Which is exactly what happens.
But he, like, the Watcher, he was, like, watching over that universe. That was his kind of...
He's still like destroyed the multiverse, though. Almost,
I know he did.
He's not a good guy. Nick.
Are people not focusing on the bigger thing? We actually see Shumagorath.
Yeah, we did see Shumagorath.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah,
Peter almost destroyed the multiverse.
That's true.
I wonder if how much people will fixate on that, because he did definitely like. I wasn't sure if they were going to downplay that.
Yeah,
him talking basically while Doctor Strange was trying to concentrate.
He did
effectively caused all this.
Yes,
but I'm like, it's kind of one of those where I'm like. Don't be a party pooper and grouse about the catalyst for a super cool story.
I want the four people, or is it five people in the same room that caused the destruction of the multiverse? It's Loki, Sylvie, Spider-Man,
Doctor
Strange,
uh-huh.
And I feel like there's one other person who's...
People just blame Star-Lord for letting Thanos
I was going to say, the reason Star-Lord gets blamed for all that is partly because people don't like Chris Pratt, and they don't like Chris Pratt.
Yeah,
so that has a lot to do with it.
I have to kind of just watch the character.
Anyways, that had to happen. Doctor Strange said it did.
But I believe that is why Tom Holland will not get the Spider-Man will not get the same
because people.
There'll be some think pieces, because that's what the internet's for. But it won't be as widespread because people like Tom Holland.
I have seen the memes where it's like, oh, why didn't they just make Doctor Strange just make people forget that. What Mysterio had said or whatever, and then they could just cut to credits. Yeah, that would have been great.
These are the same people.
Why didn't the Eagles fly?
These are the same
fly his identity to more to
the first
Mount
Indiana
Doom.
Jones. If Indiana Jones hadn't been in it, it would have been fine.
Right. Well, maybe because we wanted a movie.
Yeah. If you if you make that Indiana Jones argument, then you are a character on The Big Bang Theory,
and not one of the good ones.
Not one of the good ones.
There aren't any good ones. Big Bang Theory.
No, you're a character on Young Sheldon. That's how bad you are.
This was great, and I loved it. And
I really need to consider where it falls in my like ranking of MCU.
I need to do the same, but it's high up there. I think it became my favorite movie I saw this year. Like it went over above Mitchell's versus the Machines. It went above Free Guy. Like, I really, really liked this.
Really good.
I think it was definitely my favorite movie of this year.
I saw a lot of people compare it to Endgame. And I was like, it is.
It's the Endgame of the Spider-Man series.
Yeah. Yep. It didn't have 22 movies of build-up to it. Or 21.
It did have, like, eight.
But where was Spider-Ham?
Oh, thank God.
It's like, it's like when I saw Venom show up, my heart sank. Dave would have had the same feeling if Spider-Ham had showed up.
Venom is cool.
Venom is cool, but I'm a little less enthused after that second movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I still haven't watched it. I need to. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to sub in Anna for Dave, and we're going to talk about the Friends Dispatch.
Actually, you're going to...
Okay, so we have subbed in. I was wrong. We did not sub in Dave. We're keeping our Dave.
Yep.
But
we've sent Nick to the furnace.
We switched out Nick for Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Despite the fact that Nick is the one who bought French Dispatch so I could watch it, he has not watched his own copy yet.
What?
Yeah.
Nick has watched 800 movies.
He's watched 800
movies. He's been busy. He just hadn't gotten to that one. Yeah. Sometimes you don't get to things.
It's true. I get it. Sometimes you got to be in the right mood.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Wes Anderson is a mood.
It is definitely a mood. And
would you say this is a pretty Wes Anderson, Wes Anderson?
This is the most Wes Anderson than ever Wes Anderson to Wes Anderson.
Yes. Yeah. I did occasionally have to fight down a little bit of a, this is so obnoxious, vibe of like, oh, he's so quirky.
You know how we have friends who just like, loathe Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
This is the same thing. It's like, if you don't like Wes Anderson,
within minutes,
you will want to throw something at the screen. It is everything is very cutesy music and the design of it all.
If you've ever seen this scene from Doctor Who, there was a bit where like the Dream Lord or whatever, played by that guy who played, who was the dude in the MCU, British actor, short, kind of funny-looking dude.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Face chest.
He is the one who played Bilbo?
Toby Jones.
Toby Jones, who's an amazing actor.
Wait, what?
He played, like, the Dream Lord on an episode of Doctor Who, and he calls out the Doctor, because he's a variant of his own dreams or whatever,
okay, yep.
He calls out his waggish behavior.
Mm-hmm.
He's like... You know, he's like, you are such a collection of just walking quirks and stuff. It is the most caustic takedown I've ever seen of Doctor Who was on Doctor Who. And it was like, it seemed like a self-aware thing. And I feel like, look up the scene if you can. Just look up the Toby Jones or Dream Lord in Doctor Who and you'll see this. They could be talking about Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
That said, I am a person who's only seen one or two Wes Anderson movies, liked them, but also did find the quirk a little overwhelming. So I just haven't seen any of the other ones, any of the big ones. And so I came into this fairly open-minded and had a really good time.
And I became a fan. I think Fantastic Mr. Fox would finally tilt me over from fan into, okay, I like everything. And then I went and watched almost... I think I've got a couple things left. I've never seen Bottle Rocket.
Yep.
I haven't seen Bottle Rocket.
Oh, wow.
That's his first one, right?
I think it was his first one.
It's his very first. I think it was like a student film.
Is Rushmore
movie?
His?
Something.
Yes.
No, Rushmore is also.
No, Rushmore's
his. No, that's for sure okay, him. Yeah. Those Bottle Rocket, I think, might have been his first one, and it was like a student film
or
something.
I was going to say, I believe it was
a
student film.
I think those are the two that I haven't seen.
If I had to guess, by the way, I bet.
I haven't seen Rushmore.
Oh, man,
I bet Bottle Rocket
one.
Is like a highly crafted student film.
Yeah.
It's very well crafted.
It probably looks very professional.
I'm kind of saving them for a break when you need what new Wes Anderson movie.
That's fair. That's
so
fair.
I've got them right there ready to watch because I think I've seen everything else, and I don't love everything. Like, what's the train in India one? Darjeeling
Limited.
It is a weaker one, I think. It's got some moments, but it's not my favorite.
I actually like that one probably for its weird set design and also...
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I feel like the fact that it takes place on a train car is just like so... It's interesting because when you're shooting shots or when they're shooting like shots on that, it looks so like natural in Wes Anderson's style.
Yeah.
Whereas like a lot of his like sort of like almost... school shoebox vignette projects.
Yeah, you feel like you're watching like a proscenium stage kind of thing.
This, however, feels incredibly natural because like the entire set is like a train car. Whatever, go on.
Yeah,
and so
that's
forth.
True. I'm not sad I watched it, but it's not one that I'll rewatch.
It's definitely not one of his best. However,
Darjeeling
much like
Limited, more like Dark Crapping Limited.
Oh, Dave, that was bad. And also mean-spirited.
I was only saying what Randy was thinking. I haven't seen the movie.
I was thinking Dark Crapping Limited.
Oh, wow. So, should we
talk about French Dispatch?
Well,
we're talking about Wes Anderson.
Well, I think that much like with if you don't like Quentin Tarantino, you're probably going to think Reservoir Dogs is his best movie. If you don't like Wes Anderson, you'll probably think Bottle Rocket is his best movie.
Yeah, yeah. Because he only gets more self-indulgent as he goes along.
Yeah, though I will say that Owen Wilson in bike shorts is much better of a quirk than Quentin Tarantino's quirks.
Yes, that's fair.
As far 100% as quirks
fair. Go. This one is a...
It's a series of vignettes.
It is about a newspaper out of... Is it Kansas?
I believe it's out of Kansas.
Yeah, this...
It's somewhere in the Midwest.
This guy who is the son of a newspaper magnate in Kansas went abroad to France.
Yep.
And starts a... No, does he go back to... He's in France.
Yeah.
In Ennui, France.
Yes.
A town called Ennui.
This person, by the way, is Bill Murray.
Bill Murray, yes. And he starts a newspaper called the French Dispatch.
Yeah, he's the patriarch of the newspaper.
Which I believe sends their European news back to America or something.
Something like that, yeah. It's a bunch of expats from America doing reporting over in Europe. And in the vignettes, you see reflections on their time at the paper.
Some of their reports. Because the central fulcrum that this turns upon is that the editor has died. And in his will, he has said that basically the printing presses are to be destroyed, the papers to be liquidated. He wants the paper to die with him, which, by the way, is a very Wes Anderson thing.
I was going to say, everything that you have described thus far is like the most uniquely Wes Anderson description. When you said, I hadn't quite put it into frame after watching it until you said, it's a bunch of American expatriates reporting the news in France to a small town in Canada.
Yeah.
I was like, only in a Wes Anderson movie is that going to take place. Yeah.
And it's very successful. It's a very successful paper.
Again, only in a Wes Anderson movie is that going to take place.
It's also an homage to, and it shows over the various decades that this has existed. Some of these stories are flashbacks to 60s era type things.
Yeah.
It's an homage to the magazine The New Yorker, and both its kind of cartooning style and some of its sort of dryly humorous short stories, which clearly have been an influence on Wes Anderson over all of his films. But like, you know, like James Thurber and like a lot of those guys who made their names doing as humorists for The New Yorker back in like, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
By the way, the notion of I don't want my work to survive me, I'm a little worried that basically when Wes Anderson dies, he's going to have some kind of minions in tweed suits come to my house and destroy my Blu-rays.
They're going to burn all your Blu-rays.
Yeah, they're like... You're going to have
a quirky conversation as you're talking about it.
Yeah, but there's going to be violence because he's not against violence.
I think you're describing the SNL skit, The Coterie of Midnight Assassins.
Yes, I do love that. Wes Anderson's X-Men.
Wow.
So let's see. There's maybe like an extra vignette or two, but three main ones. The first one is about what? An artist in prison.
He is an artist who is in prison.
Yes.
And his muse, who is a police officer.
Yes.
And Adrian Brody playing himself, as he always does, who is a man who also in prison wants to fund this man's art career, basically.
Yes. Wait, it's not Adrian Brody. It's
Adrian Brody.
Is it not Jason Schwartzman?
No. Jason Schwartzman is...
Oh, you're right. He's later on. You're right. It's
ironically, Jason Schwartzman is not in the one that's about teenagers.
Yes.
But I think he's in the last one.
Who is the artist? Is it from Flight of the Conchords?
Benicio del Toro.
Oh, it's Benicio del Toro.
Right.
Yeah. I thought it was the guy from Flight of the Conchords for most of that time.
very different movie.
No, he's very similar, though. He's going to play that guy. But it's Benicio del Toro playing. Yeah. And... That is so weird and violent in some ways.
Yeah, it's so... That was my favorite of the vignettes.
It's really good.
Actually, they're all really good. It's kind of hard to pick favorites. I like them all for different reasons. But
I think
I ultimately liked the
Jeffrey Wright one best.
Oh, yeah, man, that one is really good.
There's a middle one that's about like sort of a what? It's a protesters.
Yeah, it's
student
a bunch
protesters.
The protesters thing, which has like the May December romance between Francis Conroy. No.
May December is a thing in that goes back to Rushmore.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a theme in his other movies too.
It's not Francis Conroy, is it?
The lady from
Fargo.
Fargo,
it's not Francis.
It's not Francis Conroy. It's, oh man.
Fuck.
I'm gonna look it up.
Mac.
I know
Francis
that this is incorrect, but the only name in my head is Fran Drescher.
It's definitely not Fran Drescher.
It's definitely not her.
Let's see. Fargo is...
I think we know the answer to this question.
Is this McDormand? Or
it's Frances McDormand. That's it. Frances McDormand.
Okay.
Yes.
See? I was just about to say, maybe we should...
What do we need the internet for? Maybe we should to confirm Dave's rightness?
Yeah.
And no. that one is fun, and it's the Dune kid.
It's the Dune kid.
Timothy Chalamet.
Again, another name.
Having
we'll
fun,
never know.
Sort of art student smoking cigarettes and very
oh man,
twee.
I love I think that the way that they connect is that one is the reporter for the French Dispatch, of course,
yep.
and the young teenager is like, I would like for you to copy edit my manifesto, which
right.
is fucking hysterical.
Yeah, it's great.
But that one's delightful. Actually, they're all really good.
They're all really fun.
And then Jeffrey Wright's one is about his own, it's told through like a version of like a Dick Cavett type 60s
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's an analog somewhat to, who's the black activist, author, playwright guy, and speaker. Of the 60s.
I don't remember.
God, I'm not going to be able to say his name suddenly.
Our pop culture knowledge is really failing us.
Yeah. He is, in fact, he was a guy who in real life was also gay,
yeah.
and I just can't say his name right now. And he's a loose analog to him.
Yeah.
But he is reporting on a police chef and how a police yep. chef played a role in the rescue of a kidnapped kid.
It's not yeah. Bayard Rustin, is it?
No.
Yeah.
It's the police chief's son... Who was, of course, kidnapped
right.
by a corrupt cop and his gang of his what I can only describe as Wes Anderson characters.
Yes. Oh man,
they're all so Wes Anderson-y.
I was watching. Yeah, I was watching it and be like, wait, who's that? Oh, that's that guy.
Yeah, they're basically all his regulars.
Oh yeah,
including very small bit role with Edward Norton.
What was Edward Norton's bit?
He was the corrupt cop. All he really did was play the guitar and then die.
And who was the woman who was giving the lecture in the...
Oh, that is Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
That was Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton was the lady who fucked the art guy.
No, that's Frances McDormand.
Wait, then was Tilda Swinton...
Oh, you're... The lady who was the muse is Léa Seydoux. Who's not an actress I knew.
No, I think she... Because she described briefly, she was like, ah, yes, we had a torrid affair while I was interviewing him or whatever in a supply closet. And then she, like, switches the slide and it's like, oop, that's me naked. Don't look at that. That one is too. It's very fun.
That's funny. But yeah, the bit at the end, the reminded me a little bit of all things, of Chew. The chef who was like... puts poison in a thing, and he poisons himself because he knows that they won't eat it unless he eats it.
Yeah. Oh, right, yes.
What was it? How did he survive?
James
was
Baldwin, by the way. That was the name I was trying
James
to
Baldwin,
think of.
Okay, yeah.
Was it that he had also I guess he just willingly
he
ate
just
it.
He just willingly ate
like,
it because he
it was a flavor I would have never tasted before,
or
whatever. What a weird fucking movie.
Yeah.
It's incredibly Wes Anderson-y.
Yeah, but it's super fun. Like,
yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's... It's not like my favorite, but it's high up there. I don't like it as much as, say, Grand Budapest Hotel, which I think is one of my high up ranking ones.
Interesting.
But it's really good, and it's got a phenomenal cast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those ones, like, I'm sure like all of his movies, you could walk in on almost any given scene and get a good moment and enjoy it. And also just enjoy the set design, enjoy all the rest.
It's pretty wonderfully crafted as far as set design goes, but I think that that's probably to be expected of a Wes Anderson movie.
Pretty much
at this point,
given that
you know it's like his 10th one.
And there's also a little animation in it.
the big man holding
onto a car.
It's so jarring almost.
Yeah.
But
hysterical.
I do love the idea that their police department just has a strong man on call.
They have a chef and a strong man, and they both solve crimes.
Yes.
Speaking of. If you're listening, that's the pitch for my new comic. Police strongman and a police chef who solve crimes.
They solve crimes.
All right, well, that cannot be a more different movie than Spider-Man, but we're recommending them both.
Yes, for sure.
Oh, did y'all already talk about Spider-Man?
We did talk about Spider-Man. Andy, do you have any Spider-Man thoughts?
I also recommend Spider-Man. It's very good.
Yes.
For a number of reasons. I'm sure they all went into, most notably, that he's not... did y'all do a spoiler version?
We did.
Okay,
so...
yeah, he's not Tony's protege anymore, which is just good.
In fact, it's been more or less erased. Nobody remembers he was Tony's protege.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. If only it was erased from me too.
That was the meme that I saw posting where it's like, this will make everybody forget that you're Spider-Man, and they cut to the audience watching it, and they're like, why is this kid in a t-shirt? Why am I watching this movie? It's called Spider-Man, but it's just a kid in a t-shirt.
All right, I think that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
Yo, show!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.